can't sleep, trapped in my own mind. Anxiety. Drowning in the darkness, just can't see the light.
Depression.
Doubtful, insecure, can I really do this?
Imposter syndrome.
I'm alone, unloved, just feel invisible.
That's loneliness.
We're not therapists, but we need one.
Hello, and welcome to
We're Not Therapists, But We Need One.
The podcast where we have honest and vulnerable conversations about our mental health with one another.
I'm Jay.
And I'm Anthony, and neither of us are therapists.
But we're trying to help ourselves and each other by sharing our experiences and feelings.
In this show, we'll deep dive into topics like anxiety, depression,
self-esteem, trauma, and more.
We'll talk about how they affect us,
how we cope,
and what we've learned along the way.
We're not doing this to bash or blame anyone,
especially our families, who may have contributed to our mental health challenges.
We're doing this to heal and grow,
and hopefully inspire others who can relate and open your mind to your own healing.
We also want to warn you that this show may contain some sensitive and triggering content.
We'll be talking about personal and painful things that happen to us and how they still affect us to this day.
If you're not comfortable with that, or if you feel like you need professional help,
this show may not be for you. But
if you're ready to join us on this journey of self-discovery and self-improvement, we're glad to have you.
We're not experts, but we're honest and we're not alone. Now, let's start the timer. Jay, how do you feel today?
Fine. How are you?
Thank you. Good. You know, I say I'm good. I'm good today. The last 7 days, I have had the worst anxiety of my life. To the point that last Tuesday, after we recorded this, I ended up having panic attacks from 8 p.m. till 12 p.m.-ish, somewhere in that area, to like midnight, basically. And then, yeah, just my anxiety was just up for 7 days until today.
Anthony, it's just all in your brain. You have the control to stop it.
So it is all in my brain. The
you just gotta not think about it.
Don't. Oh, that would be lovely. Let me tell you, if I could, I swear, after you have a panic attack and an actual factual full on panic attack, I get triggered. I trigger more panic attacks thinking about being afraid of having another panic attack.
Yeah.
And it just spirals. And I think it might have been related to Joe leaving, because he went on a trip on Wednesday and he got back yesterday.
And now you're all better.
I was not like stressed about him leaving, but I guess subconsciously I was having a hard fucking time with it, because yeah, I was just on edge the whole time.
Huh.
Yeah.
Oh, something love.
I guess, but still, I need to, I feel like that's something I need to figure out, because that can't keep happening.
Yeah, you can't have that kind of anxiety when your partner's not around.
Yeah, and it's weird because, like, there are plenty of days and evenings he's not here, so I don't understand why it hit me that way.
And it's not like you're so codependent you're incapable of thriving without someone.
No, I mean, no, I guess just,
at least...
Let me rephrase that. Maybe.
At least on surface level.
Surface level. Consciously, no. I feel fine. Subconsciously, I guess there's a problem.
Subconsciously, I'm insanely crazy. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, basically. But I have, over the past week, I've gone back up on my Lexapro all the way back up to the 20 milligrams per day that I was originally on, which kind of sucks, but... If I have to pick between having a hard time orgasming, let's just say it the way it is, because this is that podcast, having a hard time orgasming and having to deal with constant anxiety and depression, the orgasms are going to have to take one for the team.
I wonder which direction I would go.
If it wasn't as problematic in my day-to-day life with all the things that I want to accomplish, I feel like, I don't know, I'm going to revisit this with my doctor tomorrow too, because I see my PCP tomorrow. So probably going to have a nice little conversation about this to see what my options are, if any, if I just need to keep doing what I'm doing. But I felt like depression has sort of crept back up on me too, and that is probably also a side effect of going down and tapering the Lexapro.
Yeah.
Because it's not just for anxiety, it also helps with depression. And it does what it does really well, to the point that it also sort of keeps you from doing other things like, you know, orgasming.
Well, you know.
Yeah, you know.
You're asking a lot.
I know. I'm just terrible. But today actually was a pretty productive day. I mean, I was really slow at work, but I managed to get some writing done. So that was nice. I felt like it was really good writing too. So that was really good.
Man, there's nothing that feels better than when that happens.
It was
when you get in a good groove.
I just felt like the descriptors were there, and it's been weeks since I've written anything at all. And so getting the rust off and feeling it fall off so easily and falling back into it, because I was like, I'll hit 1,000 words and then no matter what, I'll stop. Even if but then I got there and I was like, no, I need to finish this part because I can still see it and it's fresh.
Yeah.
So it's just, yeah, it's nice because that felt good because I've struggled with it so much. But yeah, it's weird. I don't know. You know, I understand a lot of my anxieties are subconscious, but I just never assumed that I had that many stressors to be able to have full-on panic attacks. And I've had them before, but it's been years since I've had one. And this year I had 3 days in August where I had 3 straight evenings of panic attacks. And then I had Tuesday and then just general high anxiety the rest of the time. And I can feel my body is still tense. Like I can feel my jaw is really tight. My neck is tight. My shoulders are tight. And I try to relax them consciously. And they just, as soon as I stop thinking about it, they tighten back up.
Yeah.
So I know my body is on like high alert still, and I'm just not sure how to alleviate that. Yeah. So yeah, that was a lot about me.
Do you ever feel like when you're writing that your tense, like muscles and all kind of drop or what?
I don't know. I don't think I've ever observed myself that closely when I'm writing.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times when I'm in the midst of writing, I'm not conscious. I'm not thinking about me.
Yeah.
I'm focusing on the story and picturing it and kind of seeing what the characters are doing and letting the story take the course that it needs to, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times when I am writing, it's when I get into a good groove, the writing sort of does itself to a little bit of a degree.
Yep.
And that's when I can start seeing things that will actually surprise me, where I'm writing how I know the story should go, and it's different from what I thought was going to happen. Because
yeah.
I'll get to a point I'm just, you know, it doesn't make sense for it to go the original way that I thought. And at that point, I have to let it. You can do one of two things. You can either force your characters into your original plot idea, or you can let your characters breathe and do what it is they would do naturally.
Yeah.
And some people do the former really well, but I don't. I can't. It feels so forced and it feels unnatural when I do it. So it's just not my thing.
It was funny. I actually ran my book that I'm working on through ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. And it was like summarizing chapters for me, going, oh, I really like how this, you know, goes in depth about this and blah, 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 blah. It's like, anyways, yeah. My favorite part though, was I was like, if you were going to continue this, what direction would you go with it? And ChatGPT threw out like 3 different directions and none of them were what I had planned.
Ooh.
And I was like, I don't really like any of those directions. So I said, well, what do you think of this direction? And it was like, oh, that's a really great idea also. And I'm like, oh, thank you for making me feel really good.
I do like that it gives you a pros and cons of your manuscript. And there's a There's another one that I just stumbled into. I'll have to message you about it offline. That does, you can upload entire documents and it will read them.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember what it's called, but I can't for the life of me.
I feel like if you pay for ChatGPT, you can actually do that now that I think about it.
Yeah, but this is free.
Oh, yeah, I paid
for it. And it includes PDFs, and you can upload PowerPoint presentations and have it generate an audio discussion of the PowerPoint presentation. It's really impressive.
I uploaded math images and had it literally go and solve all my math problems from the picture.
But anyways, we're getting off the topic of mental health.
Well, so it was healthy to not have to do math.
That's true. I like doing math. It helps me, though.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was glad to spend the time, bless you, several times.
Oh, good God.
Damn.
Been holding that in all day.
But it was really nice to spend the time writing because I did a little meditation beforehand because I felt like my brain was so everywhere still. So yeah, it was nice. I did my little grounding meditation. I centered myself. It felt like I was back in my body and then I could actually focus on what I was doing that I wanted to focus on. I think that really makes the difference whenever I get started doing it and I'm like, oh, I want to be here doing this. But I also oftentimes forget that the process of writing, even people who like to write don't like to start writing. And so sometimes you just have to sit down and start doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been noticing that since I've moved here downtown and the weather's been so nice lately, we've mentioned this before, I've enjoyed sitting on patios and I bring my iPad and I've kind of enjoyed getting back into this story that I was working on because it stalled for months. And it's really fun how I almost somewhat let what's going on around me guide me a little bit.
Yeah.
Because when I'm introducing a new character or something like that, oftentimes I'll kind of glance at someone and be like, okay, that's who I'm going to specify this around. I've witnessed them. I see their actions. I now can visualize the character that I want them to be.
You know what's funny is that there's a really good writing exercise to teach you how to describe things, and it's literally just staring at one single object and putting on paper what you see.
Yeah.
And that's really an interesting way to do it because that's, you know, another thing you can do to pick out people to, like, represent your characters. But that's also a really effective grounding technique when you're in a panic or anxiety attack. Is to start there. It's a 5-4-3-2-1, and I cannot remember all the details for the life of me. I got them in my little mental health Bible that sits right here, which is all my notes from my 5 weeks at intensive outpatient therapy. And but it's basically you're trying to like identify things with your senses, like a certain number of things you can see, a certain number of things you can hear, a certain number of things you can smell and touch and taste. And it helps to put you back in your body because a lot of times when you're in the middle of a panic attack, I can't speak, unreality sets in. And so it's like you're having the panic attack, you're in it, you're experiencing all the fear, all the panic, but at the same time, you're sort of watching it from a distance.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's very, And I find for me, when I'm in the midst of a panic attack, I end up pacing a lot. Because I just need to move. And so funny enough, on Sunday, I went to visit my grandma and I wasn't going to go because I was still feeling really anxious and I was afraid of driving and getting in the middle of like a real panic attack and having to like pull over and be in the panic attack. I even took my propranolol with me, which I have never really had to take up until the last couple of months. And just in case. But I got there and it was really interesting because she and I were pretty open with one another. And I was telling her, you know, like about the issues I was having with my anxiety. And she, you know, she acknowledged that I seemed really keyed up. And I was telling her like some of the ways I alleviate it. And then immediately she was just like, well, why don't we go down and we go check and see if the cows have enough water? Why don't we go down to the barn and let's go look at this? why don't we go look at this? And so we just started walking around the farm. And it was such a good moment because I love my grandmother, and we do spend, you know, not a lot of time together, but I make sure I try to visit like every other week at least. And I don't know. It was just really nice to feel seen like that by someone, and to feel like that was an acknowledgement of, hey, I see you're going through this. I know that it's real and serious, and here's me trying to help.
Yeah.
And not just with placations, but with an actual practical thing.
Well, and not with that typical, well, you just need to distract yourself. Like, it's these simple ways of trying to be like, do this.
Yep.
It's nice to kind of, that she gets involved with it.
It was really great because it was both her acknowledging the reality of anxiety and how it physically affects you, and then also seeing me. I felt so seen. You know, and I don't get that super often with my family.
Relatable.
So, yeah. And so it was just, man, it was just such a moment where I don't think I could ever express to her how much I appreciated it, but I did express it to her. I did make it a point to tell her how much that meant to me and how much that changed the course of my day. Because after that, I mean, I still had some anxiety, but it was not nearly as bad. And I ended up going on a 3-mile hike after that to try to like wear myself out a little bit. And that I just, the combination of that things that day just really, it turned a lot of stuff around that could have gone a lot worse that day. And it just makes such a difference. And it is so hard in the midst of panic attacks and having really severe anxiety because you don't feel like a lot of people understand. You feel really alone. You feel really isolated because it takes away your ability to connect with your surroundings in any meaningful way. And I don't know, like, if you have panic attacks too, but I get sensory overload.
Yes.
And so normally in the evenings, whenever I finally start winding down for the day, I have the TV on in the living room and I'm watching something, and then I'm also playing a video game on my other TV. And so I'm doing a lot of things, and it helps soothe my brain most of the time because I can concentrate better if I have multiple things going on, which sounds insane, but just is. Like, I guess it's also sort of a familial thing because my grandmother's like that, my niece is like that, my aunt is like that, where a lot of times if we're doing like paperwork or like, you know, when I'm sitting at work looking at a spreadsheet, I have to have music or a podcast going or else I can't focus. So anyways, I couldn't do that. My normal evenings that I would just spend there on the couch and relax and like start winding down, I couldn't because it was too much.
I've noticed that outdoors always helps me now, unless it's too hot, then I hate it. But just kind of like lately, anytime I feel a little bit distressed or something, I just take Reggie on walks now.
Yeah.
And depending on how I'm feeling, sometimes I'll go to the busier areas and sometimes I'll go the opposite direction because my apartment now is set in this area where if I go one direction, I am in the midst of everything. Restaurants, shopping, all of that. Crowds, people. I'm getting used to the staff at all these places now and they're all like, Jay, Reggie. Or I go the other way and I hit a historic neighborhood that is quiet, peaceful, don't run across people, little traffic, and I'm just like all within distance of walking from my apartment. I have two different oases.
That's really nice.
And I'm loving it because one, I'm getting the exercise I need, which is super beneficial. I'm getting the fresh outdoor air. I don't know. For me, it's been weird seeing the active society around me, hustle bustle of Midtown Oklahoma City, and it's almost like welcoming and enjoyable to see all these people just out and about living their happy lives, having drinks, having food, walking around. And it don't know. It kind of takes away that loneliness, I guess, of realizing you're always, you know, by yourself in your apartment or something. And I'm like, oh yeah, there's people out here. And I know I have a ton of friends that care. And so it's not like I'm alone or anything, but I don't know. I think what happened was out at my house in Yukon, I'd been out there so long that I started to feel siloed and away from everyone. And it started feeling pretty lonely in a sense that it almost felt like a chore if I had to go do something because I had to drive 15 miles to go visit people. And now, like, all I do is walk out of my apartment and I see people. And so it's getting away from that loneliness feeling.
No, it makes sense. I mean, that's a really good way to feel like you're part of a community is to be out and about in it.
Yeah. It feels like I'm part of a community where I don't know anyone really. And then on top of that, there's a coffee shop right across the street from me that is, they hire a staff with mental disabilities. And so, I don't know. It's almost like going into that coffee shop. It grounds you in a sense to remind you how do I want to say this? It reminds you how, I guess, good your life is, that you aren't running into these struggles that this entire group of people have to. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. My stressors that I'm putting on myself are man-made by me. And so I don't know. I guess it kind of grounds me in a sense that I'm like, there are other people with different struggles than me that aren't something that they're just making up in their mind. I don't really know how to explain it. But
yeah. I mean, to be fair to you about your struggles and
yes,
I'm
not saying this other people have worse problems than you thing, just to clarify.
Right,
that's
right.
Why I was like, I don't know how to say this without it sounding like that. And that's not what I mean.
Yeah, no, I get what you mean, though. Sometimes it is sort of grounding to just to know that you're not alone like that, where you
yeah.
can see that everybody has their own struggles to deal with. And, you know, it's not really our struggles that define us, but the way we handle them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which sounds like some really hoity-toity bullshit, but
yeah.
It's true.
Actually, ironically, a couple days ago, I was walking Reggie. We went on a long walk, and then we stopped at that coffee shop. And so they love to give him a pup cup. So I get my coffee, they give him a pup cup, and we sit on the patio. Well, this lady came out and sat with me, and we ended up chatting for, I don't know, an hour and a half or more. And she was one of the mothers of one of the employees there. And it was kind of just a whole time of bonding with this stranger that I never met before and chatting about our life experiences, kind of the philosophical aspect of what's happened in our lives that's changed our perspectives. It also talked about travel. And it was just this really enjoyable scenario where I got to connect, I guess, with someone that I don't know. And hear a different side of life from mine.
That's fantastic. Because I feel like that's something that I don't do very well. Even with people that I know, where like our neighbors, I'm not super neighborly. I mean, I will, you know, interact and wave and all that good stuff. But like yesterday I was out walking the dog and I got over to my neighbor Dan's house, and you know what? He was sitting inside. Normally I just wave and I keep walking, but I stopped because his dog was out and Finster wanted to interact with his dog, who is super fucking cute. He has this little Scotty.
And, those are cute.
He's so adorable. And we call him the neighborhood guardian because he sits out there like out on the, in the front of the garage and just sits there.
That's so cute.
And he has this really like funny squeaky bark, and so he'll bark at Finster as he's coming up to go raw, 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 raw. But anyways, I stopped and I talked to Dan for a little while and just, you know, got to chit chatting and, you know, just hemming and hawing about absolutely nothing. And it left me with this sense of like, you know what, sometimes I think it would do me better to stop and to open myself up a little bit more, because I do stay so introverted. I do try to not have conversations as often as possible.
Well, and I also feel like I push people off unintentionally, strangers.
Yeah.
Because if, for example, this lady that I talked to, she stood there for a while and talked to me, and I always, you know, don't go too in-depth in the conversation. I'll, like, kind of have tidbits, and I'll say stuff, and I'll be like, oh, yeah. And I always feel like the conversation's about to end, because I don't want to feel like I'm a burden to them and holding them right up talking, which has been something I've always had an issue with my whole life, where I'm like, well, I don't want to be the reason that you feel held up. And I did something, this is so small, but I did something that I don't normally do. And I just looked at her and I said, by the way, please help yourself to the seat and join me if you want to sit down and talk. And she goes, oh, I'd love to. And I was like, that was so easy. Why do I always make that so difficult?
I think
and
it's
I think
a lot
it's
of
that rejection aspect too, where I'm just like, I don't want them to be like, no.
Well, there's that, and then there's the people-pleasing aspect of it, where you're trying really hard not to inconvenience people, because you think about it from, like, a reverse perspective. It's kind of how you operate, is, like, you know that if you get caught in a conversation with a stranger, that it's very difficult to politely excuse yourself at times.
Yeah.
And so you kind of have this, like, program in your head where you're saying, like, well, I can't really get involved. Like, if I get involved, then I'm going to be stuck.
Yeah. I also have this issue where, well, I don't, it's not an issue. Sometimes I want to talk. Sometimes I don't want to talk. I don't, I'm not in the space where I want to be involved. And so I always assume that a lot of people are in the, I don't want to be involved stage rather than being like, let them tell you what they, what stage they're in or what kind of mood they're in, or like, stop assuming that people don't want to talk to you. But, you know, as a kid, I was a talker. I've always been a talker. And I always got just ragged on it by my parents because I wouldn't shut up. And mom always said that I would be a auctioneer because I talk so much and so fast.
See, I was always the opposite. I was just a quiet kid. I've always been just super introverted. And
in school, I was very quiet.
I was just quiet everywhere, at home, at school, at family events. Like, it just never, I felt like I was observing more often than I was actually doing anything.
I wish you could have seen the millisecond of film roll that just went through my brain. And it was an imagining, it was literally imagining you as this quiet little kid. And then it shot clear to the scene of when I first met you at my crazy weird ex-boyfriend's house. And
I think if I told anybody who met me around that time of my life that I was an introvert, I think everyone would have thought I was a filthy fucking liar, I would have probably been a liar.
I just thought you were a fucking stupid because my boyfriend at the time had the hots for you, and I was like,
it's because I'm so handsome.
I did not have jealousy issues or anything at all. It was definitely not me being problematic in any sense.
No, not at all. And I surely was not antagonizing in any way, shape, or form. I don't remember if I was, but I can think of like that
I don't remember.
Of me. I don't think I was, but that age I who fucking knows what I was doing. Now, my boyfriend at the time, if he was antagonizing, I would not be surprised.
I literally don't remember anything except how much I was like,
it was how serendipitous, though, because it led us here.
I know. That was exactly what I was about to say. It led us to being very good friends.
I know.
Who now run two shows together.
Yeah, and hang out and don't get tired of one another, which is, I mean, you know. That's
no, we fucking went on a 7-day cruise.
I know. And then we stayed the night at your house one more time because I didn't want to see my parents.
I feel honored that I wanted to be seen more than family.
I love my parents, but they are a lot to deal with.
And that was like suddenly 7 years after barely speaking to each other and not having any communication. We're just like, oh, by the way, we're still friends.
We hung out one time, and then before you left, we literally paid for thousands of dollars for cruise tickets.
And then I'm like sitting there. I remember after you sent me the bill or told me how much it was to split because you'd paid for it all up front. I remember being like, did he really buy these tickets? Like, I'm putting a lot of trust in these friends. Like, they're not spamming me, right?
Oh, I know, right? That was, after you left, I was like, did we move a little fast? But I mean, it worked out for us.
Is this anxious attachment? We just suddenly go on trips with our random friends.
yeah, probably so. That feels right. That feels right for us.
Well, it worked for us. Look at us go.
I know. But yeah, I'm hoping this next week, I'm hoping talking to the doctor tomorrow. I don't know if I'll get a medication change or any of that, but I'll just maybe kind of put things on the radar. And I'm hoping bumping back up on my Lexapro starts to really mellow me back out, because at this point I just need to be able to function a little more normally.
Yeah.
And I find myself being malaised and lethargic a lot too often.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's going to get better.
We'll just keep working on it. I mean, that's the thing. It's all you can do.
Keep trying.
Just keep trying. Keep trying and supporting one another.
Yes, that's what I'll try to do. I'll try to respond well in text. I always feel bad because I'm like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to help on this one.
Well, I guess we'll find out next week.
There we go.
And we're out of time. Thank you for joining us today on our show. As you can see, therapy is not always easy, but it can be very rewarding and healing.
If you want to follow our journey and see how we progress, tune in next episode for the continuation of We're Not Therapists, But We Need One.
Join us on our socials, TikTok, Facebook, Threads, and Instagram, and email us at nopenottherapists@gmail.com.
That's nopenottherapists@gmail.com.
We would love to hear your thoughts on our journey or any questions you have that we can help answer. Until then,
stay safe.
Mental health is a serious and important issue that affects millions of people around the world.
If you or someone you know is struggling with depression, anxiety, trauma, or have any other mental health conditions, you're not alone, and there is help available.
You don't have to suffer in silence or feel ashamed of your feelings.
There are many resources and support networks that can help you cope and heal.
Here are just a few.
The Crisis Text Line, which is a 24/7 service that connects you to trained crisis counselors who can help you with any type of emotional crisis. You can text HOME to 741-741 in the U.S. or Canada, or 85258 in the U.K., or 50808 in Ireland. You can also visit crisistextline.org for more information.
The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is a 24/7 service that provides free and confidential support for people in distress, as well as prevention and crisis resources. You can call them at 1-800-273-8255 or chat online at suicidepreventionlifeline.org.
The Headspace app, which is a meditation and mindfulness app that can help you reduce stress, improve your mood, and enhance your well-being. The app offers guided meditations, breathing exercises, sleep sounds, and other tools that can help you relax and cope with your emotions. You can download the app for free and try it for 10 days or subscribe for unlimited access to all features. You can find the app on the App Store or Google Play, or visit headspace.com for more information.
These are just some of the resources that we have found helpful, but there are many more out there that can suit your needs or preferences. The most important thing is to reach out for help when you need it, and to know that you are not alone. Mental health is not a weakness, but a strength, and taking care of it is one of the best things you can do for yourself and your loved ones. Until next time.